Hey everybody, my name is Tim, I'm an alcoholic. If I wasn't nervous enough, now I'm holding a microphone. But I'm gonna do my best. While I was sitting here, I prayed that I could be honest, because I think that that is one of the most important things in this program. And, you know, I sat here and I breathed for a minute and I tried to focus on that, and at some point I heard the how it works. I didn't just hear everything that was going on inside me. And the difference between me today and me when I walked in here 4.5 years ago is that, like, I've changed. And I've changed because of these simple tools that I've been given. And I continue to change because of them, because I utilize them. With that being said, I have a sobriety date. It's October 20th of 2008. I have a home group. It's YES. Everyone probably knows where YES is, but if you don't, we meet at the Hazleton Center on Saturday at 7:30. It's a beginner step meeting. What's up? Seven? I can never get that right. I just moved here like 2 months ago, so I'm still like trying to figure it. Where I got sober, every meeting was at 8:30, and so like I'm still trying to figure out all the times and whatnot. But somehow I've been able to show up on time to that meeting every time. So it's a beginner step meeting. It's great. I'm the co-chair there. I love it. And I have another position at Young Brooklyn. I close the meeting, or I clean up, so I pretty much don't do anything there. But in name, I'm part of the group, which is great. I love that group. And I have a sponsor, and I sponsorship has been super important to me throughout this program. It's probably the only reason why I'm still here, like one of the big reasons why I stayed when I first got here. And you know, I've gone through the steps with several sponsors since I've come in, and that, as I said, has changed my life. So I like to read something from the big book every time I share a meeting. And for those of you that don't know, the Alcoholics Anonymous was named kind of like after this book that we wrote. And in the book, the first like 164 pages are a description of the program of recovery. You know, like what we do to recover from alcoholism. And this first 164 pages describe the 12 steps, which is what we do for that to happen. And the first 60 pages of that is pretty much like a description of alcoholism, and on page 44 they sum it up like pretty succinctly. So I like to read this just to keep it simple for myself, what alcoholism is. It says, "In the preceding chapters you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control of the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer." Now, when I first got here, I'm really grateful that no one pointed that out to me and was like, "You need to have a spiritual experience, man," because I would have probably left, because that just sounds too far, like too far away, too totally impossible. You know, but that 12 step, the first couple words of that, which we read just a couple minutes ago, the first couple words are having had a spiritual awakening, as in, like, you know, we promise you that if you do these other things that we you know, talk about, that we suggest, that you'll have a spiritual awakening. And I think that's like the greatest promise in this program. And, you know, as I said, as a result of those 11 steps, like, I don't have to drink anymore. And, like, I'm happy about it most of the time. And that's pretty incredible. So that being said, I started drinking when I was about 12 years old. Now, previous to that, in my childhood, I had like some experiences that were like relatively traumatic, and I don't think that that makes me an alcoholic, but I think that that kind of like set the stage. From a young age, I felt pretty like kind of like fragmented. Like, I didn't really feel at all whole. Like, I felt like somewhere along the line I'd like lost a couple pieces of myself somewhere, and you know, I was just totally consumed with like guilt and shame and self-hatred, and the idea that like I should have done better or that I should be doing better. You know, by the time I was 8, I was having like homicidal thoughts. I remember saying to a friend one day that I was gonna like bring a gun into school. You know, and for a long time I looked back on that and it was like, I was like, man, I was like a fucked up child. You know what I mean? And today I can kind of look at it and say, like, that was a terrible thing that I said and that I, you know, had put out there. But the fact remained that I was sick. Like, I wasn't a bad person. I was just really, really, really sick. And you know, what I said was just evidence of just the everything that was going on within me. And by the time I was 12, luckily I never did that. But that kind of anger and that feeling of like just hating everything kind of just continued until I found alcohol when I was 12. And what happened was, like, I had a drink, and I don't remember taking that first drink, but I do remember getting drunk that night. And what I felt that night going home was just absolutely incredible. Like, I felt free. I felt a sense of peace and freedom for, like, the first time in my entire life. I don't know that I had ever felt it before then. And I just felt okay. And, like, what that looked like was, like, I didn't care what you thought about me. I remember I was going in that night, and there was this girl that I liked, and I asked her if she would kiss me, and she told me that I disgusted her, and I was just like, whatever, like, I don't care. And I really didn't care. And that was, like, before that, like, that would have been a crushing experience. And that's kind of what alcohol gave to me. Like, I could be in a room full of people and I could not care at all what you thought. And all that stuff that was going on inside me was silenced. You know, and needless to say, like, I chased that hard. The next time I drank, I think it was the next time I drank, I pounded like a couple beers in the course of like an hour. I remember I got sick and I went home and I was sick. I drank too much and I you know, whatever. And I was throwing up. And I remember, I think, I don't like to say what normal people would do in terms of alcohol, because, like, I have no idea if normal people even exist or what they would do. So I'm not, like, an expert on that. But, like, I do think that if I didn't have alcoholism, I probably would have had that experience and not drank for a while. But what happened was I was throwing up, and I remember thinking, I maybe even said it out loud to myself, this is incredible, and I want to do this again. And that is just sick. You know, and that is evidence of just the effect that alcohol had on me. You know, what it did for me. It did something that, you know, I just didn't have other tools to deal with my life in the way that I felt like I could deal with my life when I had alcohol. And by the time I was 14, I blacked out for the first time. I always thought I liked blacking out. And then I think back to, I recently thought back to that experience, and I was like, before I blacked out for the first time, I never knew what blacking out was, and I didn't plan on doing it that night. But I went out, I wasn't even planning on drinking, and, you know, at some point, I just kept drinking, you know what I mean? Like, there was no planning at all. And I blacked out, and I had passed out on the beach. I grew up in I don't know if it's important detail, but I grew up out in Queens, Breezy Point, and it's like a Irish Catholic gated community. It's very strange, and like there's a lot of drinking that goes on. And so we were having a keg party on the beach, and like I was in a blackout. I don't know how this happened, but I vomited on the birthday girl. So they were like, they had enough of me, and they just left me there in the dunes. I'm lucky it wasn't like, it was in November. I'm lucky it wasn't in December or January. You know, who knows what could have happened if I was out in colder weather. So I wake up at 1:30 in the morning. I'm running. I run home somehow. I run like a mile home, and I'm covered in vomit. And I try and convince my parents, who are both sober alcoholics, mind you, that that I had drank like two beers. And it's totally cool, man. Laugh. It's hilarious. It's ridiculous. So I got grounded, and like the kind of alcoholic that I was like, I did pretty well in school. I was an athlete. I was like a relatively well-mannered person when I wasn't like totally overwhelmed with like just all of my sickness. And like I went on my best behavior, and I got grounded indefinitely, and within 2 weeks I was like back out. And I don't know when I started drinking again, but I'm sure it was as soon as I could get my hands on alcohol. Because I drank as often as I could. So as often as I could get alcohol, I was drinking. And, you know, from there, it really kind of, like, the story just keeps going. You know what I mean? My alcoholism, you know, it progresses. It gets worse, never better. When I'm 15, my dad passes away with cancer. And, you know, I look at that situation as not, like, my family members losing their, you know, their father or their husband, you know what I mean? I look at it as, like, me and my grief. And I remember I always wanted to change my feelings. Like, if I was feeling something, I wanted to not feel anything. If I wasn't feeling anything, I wanted to feel something. And I remember I couldn't feel anything. And when I was drinking, like, I could at least cry. Like, I could at least feel like I was doing what I should be doing as a son who had just lost his father. And, you know, like, I couldn't even go into the funeral home. I remember one night I was, like, going home, me and my friend. I remember standing next to my friend, and I was just like, let's have a party. And he was like, really? Like, is that what you want to do? And I was just like, yeah, let's do that. And we set up a tent in my backyard, and that tent didn't come down, like, all summer. We were just, you know, partying all summer. And 2 days after my dad passed away, like, I took pills for the first time because, like, why not? My cousin had them because he had just gotten his teeth pulled. And, like, you know, my dad obviously had some pain medication laying around, and, like, we talked about taking that, and I'm, like, really grateful that we didn't take morphine, you know what I mean, because who knows where I would have been from there. But for some reason, like, I just didn't let that thought go through, and I started drinking a lot, and I took pills once or twice that summer, I think, and I took mushrooms for the first time that summer. Like, I was just doing whatever I could to change myself, and again, it just continues that way. Like, I start drinking more often. When I drink, I'm blacking out every time because, like, I never set boundaries for myself because, like, I'm afraid that I'm going to cross them, you know what I mean? And then I'll have to do something about it. Every time I drink, I'm blacking out. And, you know, I go away to college and, like, I go down to Baltimore for college. And now there's no one there to watch me. Like, mom's not there. Like, so, like, what I do is I just start drinking all the time. And I have a girlfriend, and we, like, just skip class together and, like, whatever, you know, like, sleep in bed. Like, we just sleep in and skip class together, and I'm drinking all the time. And I've come to this point where, like, I don't care about anything but drinking. Like, I'm not going to school to do what I was meant to do there, go to class. Like, I'm just going there to party and drink. And, you know, it just keeps continuing. Like, that summer I go home, I'm lifeguarding in Breezy Point. And I don't know what the culture of lifeguarding was, but, like, my culture was, like, I drink every single night. I get my check on Friday night at midnight, and I'm waiting in the bar at the ATM machine at 11:45 because, like, I don't have any money left because I drank it all up. And emotionally, like, I'm just on the rocks. And I reach out to my mom, who had been sober at that point for, like, I don't know, 25 years or something like that, 20 years. And it had to be, like, 22 years because... Actually, the seed for me in AA was planted when I was about 15, and my mom was celebrating 20 years, and I went to the meeting, and I carried out the cake at the meeting, and like, someone shared for her, and I identified, you know, and I put that in the back of my head, and, you know, I find myself just emotionally on the rocks. I'm at this place where, like, I can no longer picture my life with alcohol, can no longer picture it without it, you know what I mean, but, like, I just, like, need to keep drinking. And I try and quit by myself. And then, like, a lifeguard party comes. And I just say to myself, I'm like, I'm not going to be able to not drink. Like, it's just not possible. 10 minutes left. All right, thanks. It's just not possible for me to not drink. And so I go and get drunk and do something absurd. And, you know, like, I go back to school, and I'm working this job organizing a community service program on campus, and, like, the every night drinking stops, and, like, I no longer want to be, like, this drunk frat boy, like, type dude. Like, I want to be, like, a man of, like, honor, and, like, a man of dignity, like, I was raised to be by my parents, and, like, I'm not being that at all. Maybe I could be that during the day, when I'm, like, in the sunlight, but at night, like, Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde or whichever one comes out. And, you know, like I'm punching in cab windshields and like doing other violent, crazy things. And so like I become really, really depressed. I'm starting to think about suicide really often. I'm starting to have flashing images of my own death in my head. And like I'm really, really disturbed about it. So I reach out to an alcohol counselor. I reach out to the counseling center at school. You know, I tell them what happened to me when I was a kid. I tell them that I think I'm depressed because it runs in my family, and they tell me I'm a good candidate for medication. And so I'm like, great, no problem. I don't even think about alcohol. This is how like delusional I am about my drinking. And they were like, well, you need to go to an alcohol counselor because like we need to make sure that you don't drink while you're on medication. And I was like, oh yeah, no problem, totally. Meanwhile, like a couple months before, like I'm drinking every single day and can't stop drinking. So I go and like I'm just at this place in my life where I'm willing to be honest for the first time about what my drinking looks like and what happens. I tell him about the blackouts. I tell him how often it happens, and he's like, Tim, you're an alcoholic. How would you feel about going to meetings? And you know, I hadn't seen young people, you know what I mean? Like out in Rockaway, it's like an older crowd. I did not see that this is what AA could look like. And so I was just like, okay, like I need to stop drinking. I'm totally miserable and want to die. I'm willing to do something else. Like I'm willing to at least give it a shot. And like coming into the program, like I intuitively kind of knew that this thing was about I intuitively just knew about like the steps and that those were important. And I intuitively knew that like a sponsor was somehow important because I heard my parents talk about it. And like I knew that this thing was like about spirituality and just like changing your life. And I also knew that it was like, I wasn't going to go to AA and like learn how to drink like a gentleman. Like that wasn't going to be what was going to happen. It was like people go to AA and then they stop drinking. And I think that's probably why it took me so long to get there. I mean, I got sober when I was 18, but, you know, whatever. And so I start going to meetings, and my experience going to meetings is that I hate going to meetings. People are talking about how great their life is, things that they're doing to change their life. They're talking about, like, you know, their great relationship with their sponsor, and I'm just like sitting there at a meeting, you know what I mean? I haven't done anything to, you know, like I've shown enough willingness to actually go to AA, and that was like, you know, looking back, that was a start. But I needed to do more than just come to meetings. You know, for me personally, like I needed to change, because if I wasn't going to change, I was going to drink again, and like I didn't like where that was going. And so people told me to find a sponsor that had something that I wanted, and I thought that was ridiculous. And but like this guy at this meeting, I still remember the meeting. It was my first home group that was in this little church basement on a Saturday night. He reached out to me, and like he spoke the language of the heart, and I could tell that he cared about me, and that he had changed. You know, that he understood where I was, and that he had gotten out of it. And a couple days later, he was celebrating a year of sobriety. And like that was something that I wanted. I was sober for like 10 days, and I looked at that dude, and I was just like, I don't even understand how that could happen. Like how you could be sober for a year. And so I asked him for help. I couldn't even ask him to like be my sponsor. I just said like, dude, I need help. Like please. I couldn't look anyone in the eye. I couldn't, like, as I said, I was just completely miserable. I remember that meeting. This dude was like telling me how he had like hit a car and then ran away, but like had went back and like made amends, and how like the program was working for him in his life. And I just wanted to be like, dude, please shut up. But like, I couldn't even be that assertive, to tell him like, listen, man, I don't want to hear what you have to say. Like, please. But I started working the steps, and like my life changed. You know, I didn't do it perfectly. Like, I remember when I first got here, like, you know, fear kept me sober. And the knowledge that, like, the thought that I had, like, an allergy to alcohol kept me sober. Like, I was, you know, in the book, they talk about, like, the phenomenon of craving. And what that is for me is, like, I put one drink in me, and, like, I don't know what's going to happen. Sometimes I just have that one drink, and it's cool. But then other times, I, you know, drink till I can't find any more alcohol. And, so that kept me sober. I was like, if people have like a peanut allergy, they just don't eat peanuts. You know what I mean? And that kind of like worked for me then. And then as time went on, I was just like, oh my God, this is really hard, and like I have a lot of feelings, and I was like, and I feel really uncomfortable, and you know, I kept moving on with the steps, and I always kind of believed that there was something going on in the world. Like, I was never particularly religious, and like, for anyone out there who doesn't like the idea of like God, or thinks that it's like a religious thing, or that we're talking about a particular figure, like, we're not. It's God of your understanding. And you know, like it says in the back of the book, like, you know, that spiritual experience is just a personality change. And the only things that you need in this program in terms of spirituality are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. But those things are indispensable. Thank you. And so, like, that's what I did. Like, I looked back at my experience, and I was like, okay, like, I can get down with this. Like, when I was, like, the summer before I got sober, I was, like, tripping on acid in Ithaca, and I remember just adamantly defending the idea that there was something good going on in the world, in the universe, and my friend was just, like, not about it, and I was, you know, I just, like, I knew inside that there was something, you know, and I just didn't think I deserved that, you know. I didn't think that that thing cared about me so much, or that it was just way far off and not here, you know. And I did a third step, and the best way that I could do that third step when I was, like, 3 months sober, and, like, you know, my sponsor had me read 60 to 64 in the Big Book, and I was just like, all right, like, whatever, I don't know, actor, okay, I don't really know what this means. I just moved on and did a fourth step. That was the best that I could do. And that fourth step, like, was not the greatest, but I went back later on in sobriety and, like, did more thorough, you know, more thorough inventory. And, like, that fourth step at 3 months sober was the best that I could do at the time. And, like, my experience with AA is that it's met me at the level of my needs. The best that I could do has always been good enough. You know, I went on and, you know, I made a lot of amends. And I made a lot of amends around 10 months sober, because I knew that I was going to be around December. It's crazy to think back now, like, when I got sober in October, in December I applied to go to Belgium for the following school year. Like, it's crazy to think at 2 months sober I was like, yeah, I'm going to go to another country for, like, a year in, like, a couple months. But I did, and in August I went away to Belgium. I moved over to Europe and lived there for a year. And, like, that was an incredible experience. And what I found from that was that, like, there's AA all over the place, and there are meetings all over the place. And what I also found was that, like, my higher power was everywhere. You know what I mean? There was nowhere that I could go that I wouldn't be okay, that I wouldn't be protected. And, you know, I went to a lot of meetings in, like, different countries and stuff. And thank you. And I don't know. I've gotten the chance to do a lot of cool things in this program. You know, like, I graduated from college. I'm now back in New York. I moved back here, like, 2 months ago. Where I grew up, because my family was pretty badly affected by the hurricane, and I wanted to be closer to them. And, like, you know, I do want to talk about 10, 11, and 12 in the you know, seconds I have left, and I want to tie in, like, what's going on with me now. 10, 11, and 12 are, like, big in my life now, and I try and take inventory every day. I'm not perfect. And, like, 11 is just super, super important for me, and I try and meditate, like, every day and pray every morning and every night. And, you know, what I found since I've come back is that it's been kind of challenging. Like, I'm uprooted. I'm splitting my time between Breezy and Brooklyn. And, like, those practices have kept me really, really grounded. You know, and when I'm feeling bad and when I'm thinking about the future, which lately I've been tending to do a lot, you know, I just try and go to meditation and, like, return to my breath and realize that, like, this is where life is right now, like, in this moment. And that's it. That's all I got. And, like, the future is just a thought that doesn't exist yet. And for me to be afraid of that is just insanity, like, straight up. And so that keeps me, yeah, thank you. That keeps me here. And, you know, whenever someone asks me to do something in AA, I try and say yes. You know, like, as I said, I have, you know, two commitments here. Whenever someone asks me to speak at a meeting, even if it's inconvenient for me, I try and say yes, because it keeps me sober. Because if I don't utilize these tools, and if I don't reach out to people, like, if it's just me and alcohol, like, I'm screwed, because, like, I can't do it alone. So I need everybody here, and I need to try and live this program the best that I can every day, and I need to try and be helpful the best I can. And with that's all I got. Thank you for letting me share. Thank you for having me.